As I said, I'm Bill Adair, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Bill.
And because of that that date on coming to AA, I had a nickname as the Silver Slipper, because from 1950 to 1975, I was just bouncing in and out like a rubber ball. Every time I'd get into difficulties with my family or with my job or any kind of difficulty, I'd run to AA, and not drink for a while. That distracts me. And of course, tonight, when I promised Don I'd share my story, my ego is just a little bit large. Almost as large as Don.
Oh, my God.
No kidding.
Anybody
think that good?
Never.
Because I thought, well, hell, there's not going to be about 10 or 12 people there at this meeting. Not a whole lot. I'd rather be giving it to 150 or 200 people. Standing up in front of them with a spotlight on me and all of that. But I do have a pretty good ego. Unfortunately, I'm not a great circuit speaker. And that's probably because I never would take the time to develop it. I've only prepared one talk of my story since I've been in this program, and it was the worst one I had ever given. It really was. It had no feeling, had no interest in anybody. So since then, I've always, right before I do get up behind the podium, I have a little ritual that I go through, and it has to do with the moment of silence. And I will have a moment of silence, and I did that tonight before you all got here. And while that moment of silence, I'm saying to myself, let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in thy sight. And since I started doing that, which has been many years ago, most of the time when I finish telling my story, I have felt good about it. And I felt like that I might have helped somebody. But I've hurt somebody lots in the past, and I don't want to do that anymore. As I say, this ego of mine is out of hand. Because there's no way in the world that the person that I was on February the 4th of 1975 could have had this many people in one room that came over to see him. There was nobody that wanted to have anything to do with me at all on that day. And I'm the same person, physically the same person that I was then. But there has been some changes made. And those changes were made not by me, because Alcoholics Anonymous is not a self-help program. And nowhere in my book does it ever say that it is. And nowhere in my book does it ever say that my life will become manageable by me. But I've always got to put my dependence in a power greater than myself for the rest of my life. And you know something? It works better that way. I have been trying to practice these principles. Started to say to the best of my ability, but I have never done anything to the best of my ability. I've always done it just well enough to get by. Did that in school, did everywhere I went. And, well, I've got to talk a little bit about when I first got here. For the hell, if I didn't qualify, I wouldn't be here. And there's no point in me going back and telling you things about that I did when I was under the influence. Because, hell, we've all done them. We've all had blackouts. I know I asked my sponsor one time. Oh, he was talking to me, and I said, hell, there's two things that I had never done when I was drinking. And I was a never killed anybody, and I never slept with a man. And he says, oh, you didn't have blackouts, did you? And then there's one little story. I can't remember who I heard it from, but it's one that I like, and I think I tell it pretty well. It's about the guy that died and went to heaven. And St. Peter was waiting for me at the pearly gates. And St. Peter says, oh, we're so glad you're here. We're going to take you around and show you all of the different places that you can stay. And so he says, and opened the first door, and there were a bunch of people sitting on hard benches reading small print Bibles. And the guy said, well, who are they? And he says, well, they're Protestants. And they think they're having joy. And he said, well, I think I'll look around some more. So he went on down the way a little bit, and then St. Peter opened another gate, and there was a lot of people in there, and they were down on their knees, and they're working with beads and everything. And the guy said, well, who are they? And he says, well, they're Roman Catholics. He says, and they don't know that they're here yet. And he said, no, I think I'll look some more. And went on down and opened this door, and smoke just poured out of that room. And there were a lot of people in there laughing and cussing and praying and drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes, telling dirty jokes. And the guy says, well, who are they? And St. Peter says, well, we really don't know. And they won't tell us. But it's okay, because they're only here one day at a time. And I love that story. And as I said, I think I tell it pretty well. So I always try to get, that's one of the things that Don taught me, was to loosen the audience up with a joke. And I try to do that now. Because I took myself so damn seriously for so many years. And I don't anymore. I'm just one of God's kids. And because I became just one of God's kids, I have lots of brothers and sisters that care about me. As this crowd here denotes, they're here. Yesterday I got a telephone call from Jerry Jones, and he was just thinking about me, and he thought he'd call me. And then yesterday afternoon I got a call from Keith Carpenter. He was just thinking about me, and he thought he'd call. And when you have people all over the country that do that, then evidently you've done something right. And I'm not sure what it is, except that I made the effort to take the steps of this program. If I had not taken the steps, like I didn't take those steps for 25 years, nothing ever happened. I remained irritable, restless, and discontent. And I'd go out and drink some more. But then when I got to the Oak Cliff group up in Dallas, and that's the only group I could go to because that's the only group I knew about. But when I came in 1950, there weren't but three groups in Dallas. And that was the old downtown club, which is closed now, and the old suburban club, which is closed now, and the Oak Cliff group. And so as of right now, the Oak Cliff group is the oldest group in the city of Dallas. It's still in operation. And they were in above a drugstore at Beckley and Jefferson. In 1950. And I went in there, and there was a lady there that she, her son, and myself graduated from high school together. And I hung around in the program for about 4 years, not doing anything but just going to some meetings and not drinking. And then I got religion and got active in the church and got less active in AA, went to fewer meetings. Finally, I got drunk. Now, I didn't drop out of church. I stayed active in the church, drunk as hell. But I'd be on the vestry, and I'd teach Sunday school and sponsor the youth group. Hell, I brought people down here in February to go water skiing. It didn't bother me, because I didn't have any feelings. And finally, through the years, I finally did drop out of the church because I couldn't function there anymore. And then things began to get worse. I remember in 1972, which is 3 years before I came into the program, I was in the hospital with a gallbladder operation. And my visitors list consisted of my wife, my daughter, my two sisters, and my employer. And my employer wouldn't have been there if he hadn't had to. That's what it consisted of. I happened to be in the hospital. Well, Don and Frank probably remember when they thought I had a heart attack. And I was back in the hospital. And it was 3 years after I got sober. And on Sunday afternoon, the nurses came and ran 20 people out of my room. Now, that's how much my life had changed during that interim period. And it's because that people can see the steps working in somebody else. Like every one of you, I've known most of you for many, many years. And I've watched you change through the years. And you've changed as much, if not more, than I have. I know, hell, I couldn't even put up with Frank when I first met him. And since then, we have been thrown together. We didn't plan it this way, but we were thrown together so much that we became friends. And because of that, we've become to love each other. And that is really what the power of the universe is to me, is love. Anyway, I got those to him. And it was pointed out to me in the foreword to the first edition. It says that we are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body to tell others precisely how we recovered was the purpose of the book. Well, I had never seen that before, and I've got a first edition of the book, but I've never seen that. And when I started doing, or when I was tricked in doing, really, those things that they did, then I started to change. And it wasn't because I was so damn smart, because this is not, in my opinion, an intellectual program. It doesn't have anything to do with your intellect. It has to do with the actions that you take. If you don't take any actions, nothing's going to happen. And then about that time, I had never had a sponsor before. And about that time, I guess God decided I needed a sponsor. So he made me feel bad physically. And I went to Dr. Deere to ask him to give me a physical. Well, in those days, I had a few prejudices. I didn't like people from Oklahoma because I went to the University of Texas. And I didn't like doctors because they were always telling me to quit smoking, quit drinking, all the fun things. And then I just hated black people. And so God provided me with a black doctor from Oklahoma for a sponsor. Now, that some of y'all know John McShane. Well, Lewis is his sponsor, too. But John and I didn't know each other. I was the first one that Lewis had for a baby. John was the second one, and we didn't know each other. Well, I found out a few months into the program that John was saying exactly the same thing about Lewis that I was. That he went to the University of Texas and he didn't like doctors and he didn't like black people. And I just can't say enough about how I feel about Lewis. But he has done so much for me and is still doing so much for me after 20 years plus. He calls me regularly, find out how I'm doing. It just almost devastated him when Doris called him and told him that I had this disease. In fact, it devastated him so that Doris thought he didn't care. He couldn't say anything to her, and he just... And then he called me back a couple of 3 days later and told me the position that he was in. It just knocked him out. He just was speechless. And for what the book says, that we are people that normally wouldn't mix, a black doctor from Oklahoma and a redneck from Texas normally wouldn't mix, but we have become as brothers and are brothers. But he tricked me into taking steps, because when I asked him for the physical, he told me, yeah, I'll be over at the office at 9 o'clock on Monday. I got there at 9 o'clock on Monday. And we talked until about 1 o'clock. He says, too late to do anything. Come back tomorrow. And did that for 3 days. And it didn't dawn on me what he was doing until about 11:30 on Wednesday morning, when he said, don't you think it'd be a good idea if we got down on our knees and said the third step prayer together? It tricked me into taking the first three steps. And you know, Lewis doesn't have quite as long a dry period as I do. He came in the 1st of September and went out, so I've got about 7 months longer than he does. But he knew more about the program. He went through treatment at Lutheran General in Chicago, and as I understood it, back in those days, they had to do a fourth and fifth step, and it had to be a fourth and fifth step. It couldn't be a passing thing. So when he got back from Chicago, he did know a whole hell of a lot more about this program than I did, and how to take the step. And he gave me the physical, and there wasn't anything wrong with it. And on Friday, when he gave me the results, he said, well, have you started on your fourth step yet? And I said, no, but I've been thinking about it. Well, hell, I've been thinking about it for 25 years. But for some reason, I started to work on it, because he told me that I had an appointment a week from Sunday, which gave me 9 days to write a fourth step. And for some reason, I did it. Wasn't a very good one, but I mean, at least I did it. And I was still worried about the bill. The bill turned out to be practically nothing. And then I was worried about, how in the hell does this doctor give all this time to me? Well, you know how they line them up in treatment rooms, all that. And about 6 months after that happened, it dawned on me that he didn't have any patients. He drank up his practice. And I was the only patient in hand. And ever since everything has happened to me during these 20, almost 21 years, God has had a hand in it. Because who else do you know that a doctor drank up his practice so he could help somebody else get sober? Besides me. And then there's another one that always had a hand in my life, and Frank. I remember one time Frank and I were crossing paths quite often over at Alpha and everything, and I had been asked to work with the probation department of Dallas County by bringing a program to them every week. And I did it, I guess, about 6-7 months, something like that. And I decided, well, I better step out of this and let somebody else do it. And so I thought, well, who in the hell can I get? And I thought, well, I think I can get Frank Schultz. So I talked Frank into taking over that deal at the probation department. And he stayed with him for 2 years doing that. And I'm going to take my hat off to him for doing that, because I didn't enjoy it that much. I enjoyed it some, but every week for 6 months was just about enough for me. And, but he stuck with it for 2 years and did a fantastic job, they told me. And then, of course, Maloney, I remember I invited him to come over and speak to Joe Clifford. And when he got over, he was talking away. And he said, well, when Bill and I met, he said, it was an instant love affair. And it has been. I felt that way, but I didn't know anybody else felt that way. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about our fellowship, is that we can express ourselves with sentimental terms that you can't do out on the street, or you won't do out on the street. Of course, then I remember Bill Fields over at Alpha. He and I used to sit at a noon meeting every day with his sponsor was there. And if you don't know his sponsor, he's crazy. And a hell of a good sponsor. Hell of a good sponsor. And I have these friends that are around the country because of that. I have done my fourth and fifth step, and Lewis told me to do another one because it wasn't too good. And he brought somebody else came into my life about that time. He was a speaker at the Oak Cliff Group, and I had never heard of him, never seen him before or anything. And in his story, he talks about that when he got ready to do his fourth step, he went to Houston to get some help with a lady that on his fourth step. Well, that sounded pretty good to me, so I thought, well, if I ever run into him again, I'll ask him to, if he knows anybody, he can help me. And it seems as though everywhere I would go after that night, Paul Tiffany was there. If I went to Arlington to a meeting, he'd be there. If I went to Alpha, he'd be there. Oak Cliff, he'd drop by and have coffee. And I was just running into him all of the time. And then when I got to hurt him, because as I told you, I don't ever do anything to the best of my ability, just enough to get by. Well, I had just about run out of getting by on the other fourth and fifth step. And so I asked Paul, I said, do you know of anybody that could help me do a fourth step? He said, sure. So it'd be over at my house at 9 o'clock in the morning. And so I went over, and he had the house all ready for us, and he had sweet rolls and sandwiches and coffee and everything, and he had sent Marty off so we could be alone. And I thought, well, we'll knock this out by noon, and then I can take him to lunch. Well, 2 days later, we were just finishing up, and he became, I think, a sponsor, really. Even though I didn't use him nearly as much as I did Lewis, but I would. And he and I became real good friends. And every 4th of February, he would call me and wish me a happy birthday. And I didn't wait until his birthday. I usually called him a day early. I called him on the 28th of February to wish him a happy birthday. And the next to last year that he was alive, I called him on the 29th. February and said, I want to wish you a happy 6th birthday, because he'd had 24 years in. And last year on my birthday, or the year right after that, Marty called me on my birthday and wished me a happy birthday. And I don't know of any organization, fellowship, society that has that going on within me. No, I just never have run into it. And there's been some pretty close societies. Some of them have rules that you're supposed to go by. But you know what Ogden Nash said about that? In the world of mules, there are no rules. And that's the reason we don't have any rules. Because we're too stubborn. Well, we do have one. We do have one, and it's one that I hope that we are all pay attention to, is that we will not take ourselves too damn seriously. Because there's nothing that serious in the world. I think that God put us on this earth to enjoy His creation and His abundance. And I'll tell you, I'm one that has done that for a long time, is enjoy His creation. I retired from a job that I'd been fired from in 1975. They fired me. And I just kept going back in, sort of like Chuck Chamberlain. Just kept going back in, doing what was in front of me. And after I'd done that for about a year in the program, they called me in and said, we don't know what in the hell you're doing, but you keep it up, because you're worth 1,000% more to us today than you were a year ago. And then I retired from that job 8 years later. And I didn't have anything to retire on when I got here. And it was because of what Lewis had taught me that showed me how I could retire. It was pretty slim, but I could do it. And it's a formula of 80-10-10. That I was to pay me 10%, give God 10%, and live on 80%. And that's the way I retired in 8 years after I got into this program. It was slim, but it was retirement. I never will. I was planning this retirement. And I went to Bob White, and he, you know how he say, well, Sugar, let's go for a ride. Has anybody ever had that happen to them? And we got in, and we were riding around the lake, and we were coming across the dam, and I was had my chin down on my knees about how it was going to be nip and tuck on what I'd be able to live. And he said, Bill, he says, have you ever known anybody personally that has starved to death? I said, no. He says, well, have you ever known somebody personally that knew somebody personally that starved to death? Mm-hmm. And I said, no. He says, then what in the hell are you worried about? He had a way of making me see the foolishness of my ways. And there's another one. Man, the people come and say, God, I wish I could have known Bob White. And I look at him and I say, you know Bob White. Because you know me, and you know Don Maloney and Frank Schoaf and all these others around here. You know Bob White. Because Bob is carried right here in my heart, the things that he has taught me. And a lot of the things that he said to me. And it's the same way with the rest of y'all. I know Maloney and I were, I think we were taking bets on when Doug was going to come into the program. And I know that Doug has a lot of stories that he could tell about what he learned from Bob White. Because I don't see how in the world he held out as long as he did. I really don't.
Stubborn doctrine.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a stubborn doctrine.
That's
Yeah, well, that has a lot to do with it, too. Then, I'm just kind of rambling, but that's the way I feel tonight. I'm just kind of rambling. But I've got a captive audience. But I've made so many friends. Another thing that Bob did for me, and Lewis, too. Lewis insisted that I go to conferences. It's important for you to go to conferences so you can meet the people that want more out of sobriety than just not drinking. And those are the people that go to conferences. And so I started going to, well, the state convention and stuff like that. And then in 1978, Bob called me into his office one Sunday afternoon and said, "Bill, you're going to the conference at Brownwood." And it wasn't but a couple of weeks away. And I said, "Bob, what the hell are you for me?" And I can't get there. And he said, "You're going. So just give me your check, fill out this registration form." I said, "Bob, they're full." He says, "You just give me a check, fill out this registration form, and if anybody says anything to you, you tell them that Bob White said you were to be there." And so I went. He says that the reason he wanted me to go was because that we were going to start a conference here at the lake called the Brazos Riverside Conference. And he had a job that he wanted me to do, and he wanted me to go up there and look them over to see how the job was to be done. And so that's what I did. And that's one of the things I could tell you about Bob White, that if he said you were going to do something, there ain't no point in the world about arguing with him about that. You were going to do it. You might scream and holler and all that, but you were going to do it. And we got the Brazos kicked off. Don was the head red, and I was running around there with a bleeding from the head, I think, and doing the things that needed to be done to make the people happy. And they were, and we were making them happy. And we still are. We don't have quite as many people as we used to, but I think that'll be rectified too when the time comes. I can say this, we got a director of the camp that's 10 times better than the one we had for all those years. Have you met him?
Yes.
He is. He's just a fantastic guy.
Which is this one?
It's this one here, I think.
Go ahead.
So, but that's one of the things that most of you go to the Brazos Conference. But if there's anything that I can pass on from Bob White, is go to conferences, particularly your local conference. Support it. Because if we don't support our local conference, then we're going to be in trouble. I know that, who was it, Keith Carpenter? And Clancy had to do with the sign.
Yeah, Keith Carpenter.
Yeah.
Keith.
And
Yeah, Capital World Sign.
Yeah. Which is, and I want everybody to notice this, that it says Lake Whitney, Texas is the AA capital of the world. And this is Lake Whitney, Texas that you're in right now. Okay. So I'm part of the AA capital of the world. And I won't let y'all forget that, because I have received almost every one of my 20 medallions from the Lake Whitney group. I got the first one there, and it was the first meeting that I attended at Lake Whitney. And Lloyd Johnson found out that I was having my first birthday that month. He came up with a chip for me to have that night. And there's another. I hadn't seen or heard from Lloyd in, 7 or 8 years. And I get telephone calls from him now. And you have no idea. I think that Bob said something when he was ill, that we as members of AA can see the love that is in action around. We can see it. And maybe even get a little feel of it. But when you have a crisis like I have, man, it is just overwhelming. I never feel alone. I know that there are people from the East Coast to the West Coast, all places in between, that are having me in their prayers. And they not only have me in their prayers, but they're vocal about it. They call me, or they write me a card, or something, all of the time. Danny over there is came around here, about a year ago, whatever. And he and I, in this year, have become real close friends. And he doesn't forget about me. He comes over and sees me when he's in this area. And if he's just passing through. And that's the way have all of you. And one of the blessings that I think that I have by getting this illness is that since I got this illness, I've gotten to know Don a hell of a lot better than I ever had before. And that means something to me. Because everyone in this room, and a lot more too, are very important in my life. And I like to hear from you, see you. I'll call you. But I've called a few of you when you were having some problems. And I knew of that.
But you called a few of us. You had
problems too. Yeah, I've called a few of you when I've had problems. Yeah. Well, it is, as I say, it works in my life. And I hope to continue that way. If most of you know the attitude that I have toward my disease.
Sure.
I mean, it's just like, I took the first three steps on it last week, is that I am powerless over cancer. And I can't manage my life. But God can restore me to health. And I'm going to turn my will and my life over to the care of God to do whatever it is that He wants to do. And I am happy with that. I don't get all bent out of shape because maybe one day I don't feel as good as I did the day before. It's like today. I mean, I had several visitors early this in the day today, and it kind of wore me out. And I slept a lot this afternoon because I knew y'all were coming, and I wanted to be in halfway decent shape when you got here. And but in most cases, I am in great shape. I don't have a lot of pain anymore. I did up until about a week ago, a little over a week ago. And now I don't. And part of it is this oxygen. But I can breathe easy now. And I couldn't breathe before. And then the pain medicine that they had me on was making me sick. And I couldn't get that across to the doctor to change that medication until I was put in there in an emergency situation, and they changed my medication to where it doesn't make me sick anymore. Yeah. And I don't have to take as much of it as I today. So life today is just beautiful. That may sound like I'm whistling Dixie or something, because Doris asked the doctor what the worst case scenario was. He said 3 months. And I can guarantee you this, that I'd rather live 3 months the way I am living and with the attention that I'm getting and the love that I'm receiving and all that, than to live 30 years the way I see some people live with this disease or with heart disease or something like that. I know I've got a friend up in the Metroplex that's got congestive heart failure. He's in the program, but he's feeling sorry for himself. And sort of, why me, God, you know? And I know that God didn't have a thing to do with me getting this lung cancer. My book tells me that my problems are usually of my own making. And I spent 58 years smoking cigarettes. And I'm going to blame God because I've got a disease that has to do with smoking cigarettes. And I wish I could say, well, if I'd known it was going to do this to me, I never would have smoked one. But hell, I don't know that's to be true either. I probably would have smoked them anyway. As hard-headed as I am, but life is beautiful if we will take it the way the book tells us to do it. Can you hand me that big book right there? It's right underneath this table here, I think. I don't know whether any of you have seen this or not. It's not published by Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we lost our copyright on the big book. And this is published by that IWS or something like that. But Steve Brown, which most of you know,
Waco.
From Waco, and I had planned to go to the International Convention this year together. We were going to pull my trailer out there and we were going to have a real big time. Well, just a week before we were to leave is when I was diagnosed with cancer. And so I couldn't go. I was still in the hospital, I think, the day we were supposed to leave. And I want somebody that can see to read this, what Steve wrote to me.
Dear Bill, this is a souvenir of our trip together to the 95 International AA Convention. You were with me in the fellowship of the Spirit. I know you will always be. I appreciate and love you beyond words. God bless, Steve.
I've sponsored him almost as long as he's been sober. And he has done a magnificent job. But he did it, I didn't. Because I could beat him over the head with a 2x4 and it wouldn't have had any effect whatsoever. But he did the things that were suggested by this book. And all I did was point out what was in this book to him. And his life has changed. And he's become a real production in society. He's a producer. And he's even a hell of a lot better looking physically than he was when he got here. And I have so many of those that I work with. And why do I work with them? What got me going like that back 1983, because I moved down here and I kind of retired, semi-retired from AA. I went to a few meetings, but not many, because of my financial condition. I couldn't afford to make a whole bunch of them. But it was 20 miles over there to the closest meeting. That'd be a 40-mile round trip. That's a bunch of gas money. Well, one day, on a Tuesday, Doris asked me if I'd go to Waco and do some shopping for her. And I went over there, and it was in December 1983. And I went over to Waco, and I thought, well, I'll get this shopping knocked out. And I'm almost 9 years sober. And I get the shopping knocked out in a few minutes. I'll go get me some drinks. And so I stopped about 9:30, 9:45 at a 7-Eleven store on Lakeshore and 19th Street. It's not there anymore. It's right across from the Exxon station there. And to get me a Coca-Cola. And so I got the Coke and I walked out of there. Well, evidently God appeared on the scene, because he had me look back at the wall on the front of the building, and it looked like there were 15 or 20 telephones. And I thought, well, I'll make the call, but Waco's a little town, and it probably won't have a meeting in the daytime. And so I made it, but at least I would have tried, you know, trying to justify what I do. And I made the call, and they said, sure, we got a meeting at 10 o'clock. And gave me the address. Well, evidently, God wanted me in the meeting, and he didn't particularly care what kind of a meeting it was. But when I got over on Franklin Street, it was an Al-Anon meeting. But those gals opened their arms to me, because evidently they could see that I was hurting. And they opened their arms and said, why don't you just stay with us until 11 o'clock, and then there'll be some people from AA showing up, because they got a meeting at noon. Well, at noon, they had the meeting, and there was a guy there that had never been in Alcoholics Anonymous before. And I spent 2 hours with him, relating to him all of the things that I needed to hear. It wasn't that I didn't have the knowledge. That's why I tell you, this isn't an intellectual program. You can have all the knowledge in the world. I remember a guy up in Dallas, man, Johnny Cortez. He had the knowledge. He knew this book backwards and forwards. But hell, he just couldn't practice the principles. And I decided that day that there was no way in the world that Bill could retire from Alcoholics Anonymous. That I had to stay active in the program. And I had to call. It's sort of like Chuck when Elsa was trying to get him to quit making so many meetings in Los Angeles when they had already moved to Laguna Park. I mean, Laguna Beach. And he says, I can't do it. Can't do it. He says, I can't pick and choose who I'm try to help. And that's the way I started feeling about that time. Also, I couldn't let my financial condition have anything to do with what I did in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I remember that financial difficulties don't have a damn thing to do with money. And particularly in my case, because on my last drunk, I ran up a $750 hors d'oeuvre bill at a hotel, and I didn't have 15 cents in my pocket. So I had financial difficulties, and it had to do with big shotism. I wanted everybody to love me, bring it in, anything they want. And when I gave up the love of money, it just started falling in my lap. And since 1984, early part of 1984, my net worth had more than tripled. And I hadn't been gainfully employed. But I would receive inheritances from people that hell I hadn't seen. I'd have stocks that had been laying dormant, that came to life. Just all sorts of things like that. And I can't explain it. And as I said, my net worth is more than triple. And I don't have any financial difficulties anymore. I can do any damn thing I want to. Since then, I've been on 4 Caribbean cruises. And I've owned motor homes and travel trailers, new cars. all those things that I didn't think that I'd ever have again. And God just seems to take care of me when I will let Him. And that is, to me, is what this program is all about, is letting go and letting God. And He does such a beautiful job in my life, and I know that He can do it in yours. And some of them I've even seen Him do it. But we have to remember what it says in the book, that God is everything or He is nothing. Through that, there's nothing that I hell that I can't do. I'm not going to tell you that, like the doctor said, I've got 3 months. I don't know how long I've got. I know that I've got another terminal disease called lung cancer, and I probably would die of lung cancer. But I still don't know when it's going to be. It might be 3 months from now, or it might be 3 years from now. I don't know. But it's not that important. Important is, to me today, is to live each day as though it is my last day and be as happy and joyous in that as I possibly can be. And it's sort of like Robert Schuller starts his program every week, is that this is the day that God has made, and I am going to rejoice and be glad in it. And so far, since I went to the hospital and made the decision to get off of chemotherapy, that's the way it's been. It's been joyous. I'd rather live 3 months the way I feel today than 30 years the way I felt even a little over a week ago. But it was pretty bad there the last 5 days before I went to the hospital. Well, I don't know what else I can say. I've just rambled and told you how I feel, mainly, and what life is like for me today. And I hope that some of us will take on the attitude that I have been given. But I didn't have anything to do with that. Because if I hadn't had this program, I never would have been able to go through this.
Thank you for sharing your love affair with Alcoholics Anonymous and your love affair with me. I think that'll close in the usual manner, but let's just all hold hands and good.
Let me get Frank here.
Before we start the Our Father, let's just send some love and light and healing and joy to the Lord. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back.
It works.
I want to thank y'all for being here.
Before we get up here, I got something that I would like to share with all of y'all for just a minute to show you God's plan and God's design and how He walks through our lives. I've told Bill this before, but I don't know if Bill remembered it at the time I told him or not. And I don't think it has the significance that it has today. That in October the 18th, 89, when I came into this program, about a week and a half after that, I went to my first convention, Georgia State Prebate Convention. And on Friday, the first speaker I heard, sponsorless.
Yeah.
And then here I am here today to share this with you, and I mean that's a real, real special thing.
Well, yeah. my sponsor has helped an awful lot of people through the years.
Oh.
And his heart is as big as all outdoors. He's a little nutty.
But, he's in his right place?
Yeah.
I remember the one thing that he said up there. He said is there was no way with his intellect that he could believe in a program where the second step started with the word came.
Yeah. That's right.
He said, no,